to consider how that very tricky area of life, which was always tricky, as the Talmud tells us, it's an area which none of us really escape even a day without violating in some form or another. It's a part of human nature. It's one of those issues that we can't ever really defeat. We can only try to work on and to try to improve and to try to get better at. And how exactly is that area that was hard enough, how is it affected by our culture today, which is increasingly defined by the internet, and which is known as the digital era, because the internet and all of the various devices that connect us to the internet are increasingly a major part of our lives. And it's an obligatory disclaimer that one has to make whenever you talk about the internet, especially if you talk about the halacha, you talk about Lashon Hara, issues like that, and the internet, it's important to first issue a disclaimer that you're not opposed to the internet, and that's certainly true as far as I'm concerned. I have an iPhone on me right now, I have an iPad in the car, I'm connected 24/6, I am certainly a major user of the internet, and I'm not here to tell you that the internet is a bad thing. We're here rather to try to consider a little bit just how does it change our lives, how does it change our expectations, how does it change our interactions, and what do we have to know about that in order to be individuals who are careful and adherent to the principles that Lashon Hara reflect in that context. And when we talk about the internet as a notion, as a part of our lives, there's no question that it's there to do a lot of wonderful things. There are many fantastic things that we can accomplish through the internet. We can accomplish tremendous acts of Torah study, of teaching Torah, of spreading Torah, of learning Torah. We can perform great acts of chesed, of kindness. We are connected to each other in ways that were never possible before. So it's possible for us to be aware when somebody's in need, in any kind of need, and to connect in a broad sense and to be there to express our help, our concern, our actual assistance. There are so many fantastic things which we can accomplish from a religious perspective, from a mitzvah perspective. There's so many wonderful things that the internet makes possible that wasn't possible just a few short years ago. So there's no question that there's a wonderful world out there on the web. And it's not only the good things that are worthwhile. The bad things are also worthwhile, because sometimes it is necessary as well to say the bad things. There are things that are not so pleasant, but are necessary for our protection, and necessary for creating a society that is better, for improving the world around us. And sometimes we have to know the bad things. And the internet is also good at that. It's also good at warning us about what needs to be avoided, about telling us about what needs to be improved. So even in the not so nice ways, the internet can be a very positive force to allow us to accomplish what we personally want to accomplish, to protect ourselves, and to live in the kind of world that we want to live in. So there's a lot that the internet offers us. And that last point, it's important also to have somewhat of a framework, because here we're talking about Lashon Hara. So you might think, okay, so the whole point is avoid saying bad things about people. And that's not the whole story. That sometimes it is important to say something which is bad if it's going to be for the protection of others or for the improvement of society. And just to illustrate that point for a moment as kind of an introduction into the whole issue, when we talk about a prohibition of Lashon Hara, which appears probably a few times in the Torah, it's not 100% clear what is the source. The one thing we know is that Lashon Hara is definitely a prohibition in the Torah. There's some disagreement as to what exactly is the source. If I were to ask you, what is the source of the prohibition of Lashon Hara in the Torah, what would you tell me? Where is there a pasuk in Chumash that tells us that we shouldn't engage in Lashon Hara? Well, sorry? Thank you. What's your name?
Liora.
So Liora points out there is a pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim which is most often associated with this notion, Lo Seilech Rochel B'Yamecha, that we're not permitted to travel as a Rochel. What does a Rochel mean? It's not an easy word to translate. It's usually associated with a peddler, somebody who goes from place to place advertising his wares, selling things that he got over there, bringing them over here to sell.
And the imagery is that he has stories to sell, that he heard stories over there, and he brings them over here, and he shares them with whoever is interested in buying them, so to speak. So this image of the peddler, that's conveyed in that pasuk, so many understand that that's the source for the prohibition of Lashon Hara. We have a few other sources as well, as we'll come to, but whatever the source is, it's important to try to understand what exactly is the notion, what exactly is the theme. That on the one hand, there are those who maintain that Lashon Hara is really about our midos, is really about character. That somebody who indulges in gossip, somebody who likes spreading all the dirt about other people, that corrodes your character. That diminishes who you are, that makes you into a nasty person. If you're already a nasty person, it makes you into a nastier person. It makes you into a cynical person. And there are those who understand that that's really what the Torah is addressing. When the Torah says, don't speak Lashon Hara, it's saying that you shouldn't have that attribute. You shouldn't have that personality trait. That's not the kind of person the Torah wants you to be. Well, there's another way to understand the prohibition also. And there are those who understand it more functionally. That it's more about hurting someone. That if you speak badly about someone else, you could cause them all kinds of problems. You're hurting their reputation. If their reputation is hurt, they could end up losing a job. They could end up losing a shidduch. They could end up losing a friend. They could end up having all kinds of problems, lost opportunities, lost things that they have already. And sometimes that's appropriate. But very often it's exaggerated or it's disproportionate. And therefore it could be that the Torah tells us don't engage in such speech because you could end up hurting someone. Because you cause them problems. And it's not about your midos then. We don't really care necessarily then what kind of person you are. We care about how you're hurting other people through talking about them. And that creates a different understanding. That it's not about your personality, it's about your action. And when we have those two understandings of a prohibition of Lashon Hara, so within those two understandings, we can also understand why sometimes it's necessary to speak Lashon Hara. The idea that if we are able to protect someone else from harm, so then we have to say something, we have to point out if somebody's dangerous, or we have to point out if they will not be safe or flourish in a certain context. So how do you understand such an idea? Well, if you say that Lashon Hara is about being a nasty gossip, then how could you explain this idea? What would you say? How could you explain how this works? Anyone have a thought? How could you explain why this is not a prohibition of Lashon Hara?
You're not really being nasty.
Because you're being nasty, right? That if Lashon Hara is all about that you like talking about the dirt, so to speak, you like talking about how negative people are, so here, you're not motivated by gossip. You're motivated by trying to help someone. So one could argue that that's not Lashon Hara at all. Alternatively, if we say that Lashon Hara is not about your intent, but it's about hurting someone, so if I say to you, don't go into business with this guy, he's a crook, so am I hurting that guy? What do you think? Am I hurting him if I say that? Yeah, right? He's going to lose the business opportunity. So I am hurting him. So why is that permissible? Why am I allowed to do this? It's not like the first case where we say it's excluded from gossip. So it could be that it is a prohibition of Lashon Hara, but it's outweighed by something else, that we have an imperative to protect others. Where do we find that in the Torah? How do we know from the Torah that we have an obligation to step in when somebody is at risk? That's also actually a possible source. What's your name? So as Rachel points out, there is a pasuk very nearby this one. And it says, "Lifnei iver lo sitein michshol," that we shouldn't cause people to trip, which might be related to that idea. But even more explicitly, yeah? Thank you. What's your name? Natalie. So as Natalie points out, the Torah also tells us, "Tamod al dam reyecha," we shouldn't stand by when somebody is at risk, when somebody could be harmed. And therefore, we have to step in and do something. So if we know somebody's about to enter into a situation that's bad for them, we have to help. And that could be something even more important than avoiding Lashon Hara. So it could be the Torah says, yes, you shouldn't disparage someone because they may get hurt, they may lose out on opportunities. But you have to worry even more about the innocent victim. If this person who you're talking about could hurt someone else, so then that becomes a higher priority, and you have to save them. And how do you know that it could be that the prohibition of Lashon Hara and the obligation to protect someone from harm are two ideas that are balanced against each other? How could you tell that they're meant to perhaps be posed up against each other? They happen to appear in the same pasuk in the Torah, right? Those are two consecutive phrases. The Torah says, Lo Seilech Rachel B'Yamecha, as Liora pointed out, right? And then goes on to say, Lo Samar Al Dam Re'echa, that you should not stand by when somebody could get hurt. So it could be, the intent is, on the one hand, you shouldn't speak badly about people, but on the other hand, you can't let them get hurt. So you can't let an innocent person get hurt. So if that's what we're talking about, so then that has to be said. But otherwise, try not to say anything that's too negative. And then you might say, well, okay, then I can justify whatever I want to say. I'll claim that I am trying to protect someone, and I'll hide behind that, and I'll say all the nastiness and claim I have good intent. So then there are two more words in the pasuk. Ani Hashem. God says, I am God. He reminds us he's there. Why is he doing that? So we know, Rashi says a couple times in Chumash, that whenever the Torah goes out of its way to remind us that God is watching, it's an area where you could pretend you're doing the right thing and you're really not. You could pretend that you have good intentions, and inside you know what you're really thinking. So the Torah reminds you, God says, I'm God, I'm here, I'm watching, I know what you're thinking, don't think you can get this past me. So here you have an obligation to balance what you're worried about in terms of protecting the innocent and not saying something bad about somebody unnecessarily. It's a careful calibration. And God says, I'm watching, so you have to make an honest assessment. So considering that that's an important job sometimes, so the internet makes it much more possible for us to interact in a broad way, to say what has to be said, to help people when we can help them. It provides all kinds of opportunities, both nice and not so nice, to do positive things. It's interesting, just parenthetically, when we talk about this idea that sometimes we have to say something negative, so if it really is an issue of Lashon Hara that's overridden by the need to protect someone, so then we have to, like we said, be very careful to make sure that this is really necessary. So the Chafetz Chaim has a list of actually seven conditions that he thinks you have to put into play in order to make sure that what you're saying bad is justified. And others thought that you don't need to have seven conditions. You could have one condition. That was the Chazon Ish's opinion. Chazon Ish felt if you have intent to help, that's enough. You don't have to have such a rigorous standard. And others had a compromise view. Others had three conditions. So there's a fascinating Dvar Torah I saw once, just to illustrate this point, that in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, so we hear the story, we read the story of Yosef. Now Yosef spoke about his brothers. That's what the Torah tells us in Parshas Vayeshev, that Yosef, as we know, didn't get along so well with his brothers, and the Torah tells us that he spoke badly about them. Vayaveh Yosef es dibasam ra el avihem, that Yosef brought the bad reports, whatever the brothers would do wrong, he would go and tell the father Yaakov. So how could you do that? What was Yosef's last name? Right, Yosef's last name was Hatzadik, right? So if he's Hatzadik, how is he speaking Lashon Hara? So the assumption that many make is that this was an example of justified Lashon Hara. He was trying to improve their behavior, that the brothers were somehow misbehaving, and Yosef wanted to tell the father, to tell Yaakov, so they would shape up. So there was a great rabbi about 50 years ago, 100 years ago, or like 100 years ago, Rabbi Chil Michal Rabinowitz, wrote a sefer called the Afike Yam, and he notes that if you look carefully at the story of Yosef, you could find three conditions that tell us when it's appropriate to say something bad about somebody. So first of all, one condition is that if you're trying to stop somebody from doing the wrong thing, so ideally you should be able to talk to them directly. You shouldn't have to go to somebody else. You shouldn't have to go to the father, for example. So why didn't Yosef do that? So it says the Afike Yam, well, if you look carefully at the story in the Torah, it tells you why. It says that Yosef didn't get along with the brothers, and they thought he was a brat. The Torah says, "Vahu nar espinei bilha v'espinei zilpa." He was a little child. They didn't really take him seriously. They didn't think he was of substance. So it's telling us that he couldn't talk to them directly. He couldn't convince them to change their behavior. So he had no choice but to go to the father, to go to someone else. Then he notes that the Torah also says, when Yosef gave the reports, how do you say something in Hebrew? If you want to say you told somebody something, what words in Hebrew could you say to tell, to speak? Lahagid, okay. What else? Ladaber, lemor, right? Your name again was, Alana? Got it, so we didn't meet you before. Okay, so Alana says lemor, right? We have a couple of words to say speech. What does the Torah actually say by Yosef? Ve'yavei Yosef. Yosef carried the words. So what's with carrying? That's not a word for speech. So says the Afikayam, the Torah wants to tell us that sometimes when people give a report and they say it's necessary, they make all kinds of editorial changes and they add things and they put their opinion and they put their spin, and it comes out a little bit differently than it actually happened. And Yosef was so careful that when he gave these reports, it was exactly like an object. You pick it up and you put it over there, it's the same object. So too, these reports that Yosef was sharing, it was like he picked it up and put it down. It was the exact same thing. When he got it, when he relayed it, he didn't change, he didn't editorialize at all. So says the Afikayam, that's the second condition. You have to be totally accurate. You have to be completely honest in all the details. And the third condition, you notice there's something else interesting. That here, the Torah says that Yosef brought the report of what the brothers did to their father. Why is that a little bit of a strange way to say it? Because it was also his father, right? Yaakov was Yosef's father. So if you get into a fight with your brother, do you say, "I'm going to tell your father on you"? Right? You probably say, "I'm going to tell daddy. I'm going to tell our father." Why their father? So says the Afikayam, you can learn another lesson here. That here, Yosef was motivated only to try to help things. He wasn't thinking at all that maybe he'll score some points by also telling his father how much better he is than the brothers. So the Torah is emphasizing that he wasn't thinking at all about the fact that Yaakov was his father too. The only reason he was talking to him is because he was their father, and that's the only thing that was on his mind, the purpose, and not any ulterior motive. So says the Afikayam, if you look carefully at the story in Chumash, you see here three conditions that you have to have no other way of accomplishing what you want to accomplish. You have to be completely factual in telling the story, not add it or subtract or change anything. And you have to have pure motives. You're only trying to help. You're not trying to accomplish anything for yourself and make yourself look better. So it's a hard calculation that we make. And that's a part of what we have in our background when we try to figure out how can the different aspects of our lives help us or hurt us in doing this. But the internet itself creates a whole other level of thought and a whole other level of attention, which, if we're going to use it successfully, so we have to be aware of that. And in order to get some insight into how the internet does this, we have to look back many, many centuries ago to a statement that was made long before the internet was ever actually brought into being, to a statement that exists in the Talmud, which, if we try to understand it, may give us insight into how the internet has changed how we interact. Let me ask you the following hypothetical. Am I safe in guessing that there's nobody here named Yehoshaphat? Yeah? Nobody on either side of the room named Yehoshaphat? All right, it's a safe name to use for an example. All right, so let's say I were to say to you that, let's say I were to take one of you aside privately and say, Yehoshaphat's a jerk. Is that Lashon Hara? What do you think? Anyone think that's not Lashon Hara? So we're all in agreement that that's a good example of Lashon Hara? Okay. So what if instead of taking one of you aside privately, I say it here right now in front of this whole room with a tape recorder running, Yehoshaphat's a jerk. Is that better or is that worse? It's probably worse, right? Anyone here think it's not worse? So you're all in agreement that that's worse? If I say that same sentence in front of more people, you all agree that that's worse? Well, you're in good company. The Chafetz Chaim agrees with you. Right? The Chafetz Chaim in his Sefer says it's bad to speak Lashon Hara to one person. It's much worse to many people. But, you know who doesn't agree with the Chafetz Chaim? The Talmud. That's a problem. The Talmud says, very cryptic statement, that any statement that is in front of three is code word for public knowledge or imminent public knowledge, because the assumption is that anything said in front of three people is not going to remain a secret, because your friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a friend, and your friend's friend has a neighbor who has a cousin, who has a barber, who has a dog watcher, the babysitter, who has an uncle who knows somebody else. And essentially, if three people know, the whole world knows. So anything said in public, essentially, is what the Talmud is saying, is not subject to Lashon Hara. How could that be? Right? Isn't that the opposite of common sense? Isn't that the opposite of what the Chafetz Chaim says? Why should it be that somehow public makes it better? Want to make a suggestion? What's your name?
Malka.
Malka.
Because you wouldn't make a comment in front of a large crowd if it wasn't for altruistic purpose. You wouldn't.
Okay, if you're trying to help people.
Yeah.
Right? You know, let's say somebody. Okay, that's fascinating. That's actually something similar to what Rabbeinu Yonah says. Usually it takes people a little longer to get to that point. So hold on to that point for a second, because it's a fascinating point. We'll first mention the more commonly assumed understanding, and then we'll come back to that in 1 minute. So what's more commonly understood, yeah?
If the concern is that...
Are you giving a different interpretation?
Or a defense of why two or three might be more justified.
Okay, what's your name?
Alex,
yes?
If the concern is of Lashon Hara is that information that otherwise wouldn't be spread or conveyed to other people is going to be spread, so that once it's already in a venue where people know about it, that fear of the danger being spread is already started.
Okay, so that's probably the more commonly held understanding. Happens to be that there are at least four different interpretations of this sentence that you find in the Rishonim. And the Chafetz Chaim writes in his Sefer that he thinks that for practical purposes, you have to worry about all four interpretations. And I don't think this is just an example of him being stringent. If you ever read the Sefer Mishneh Berurah, that was also written by the Chafetz Chaim, so this is a common approach. It's something that's a matter of debate, so we should try to worry about all the sides, we should try to factor in all the opinions. In this case, I think it's more than that. It's that the Talmud really isn't very clear about what it means, and all the different interpretations have truth to them, and we have to worry about that. So the most well-known is what Alex says, that we're not talking about the speaker. We got the scenario wrong. It's not that the speaker says something in public, and therefore it's better. We're talking about the listener. So let's say if I got Yehoshaphat as a jerk, so I did something really bad, because I said something bad in front of a lot of people. But the statement in the Talmud is about you guys. That for you to repeat it to someone else wouldn't really be causing any more harm, because already now it's out there. It's public knowledge. Everyone's going to know what I said. So for you to repeat it, you're not really doing much more damage. Now, it's a difficult position, because what about the character trait issue, like we said before? Right? Isn't it still nasty and gossipy for you to repeat it? And who cares if it's going to get out? Isn't that like saying, well, if somebody leaves his door open, so people are going to rob his stuff, so it's okay for you to rob his stuff because somebody will do it eventually anyway? Now, you wouldn't say that. So why is it okay for you to spread bad information just because somebody will spread it anyway? It's not going to make it better. So it's a difficult position. That position, the Rambam's position, is the most commonly held position about this statement, but it's difficult. And the truth is, the Rambam does actually have an additional comment, which is not found in the Talmud, which maybe addresses this. He goes on to say that it's only permitted if it comes up naturally in conversation, that if you're not trying to spread it, you happen to just mention something that was said in public because it fits in with something else that you're talking about, that's okay. But if you're actually trying to spread it, and you're a nasty gossip because you're actually trying to make sure as many people as possible hear this, then that would not be permissible. So that was the way the Rambam understood it. There's another spin on this, a second view, as the view of some other Rishonim who say that maybe it's okay because the speaker knows that it's going to be spread by his audience, and therefore it's okay, you have his permission. Well, that only works if it's something the speaker is entitled to say in the first place. In our first scenario, where the speaker is being nasty about someone else, so he's doing the wrong thing. So what difference does it make, the fact that he knows it's going to get around? So if that's the case, it must be a very narrow application. It must be that it's talking about, let's say, something that's confidential, not something negative about somebody else, not Yehoshaphat is a jerk, but the speaker is saying something which you might have thought was confidential, but because they said it in front of a large crowd, so you know you're allowed to repeat it. You know that it's not considered to be confidential. But if that's the case, it's very narrow. It's only talking about certain kinds of statements. It's not talking about regular Lashon Hara. The third interpretation is Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah says something very similar to what Malka says. And according to Rabbeinu Yonah, it is talking about the speaker. The speaker is okay specifically because he's talking to a large crowd. And how does that make sense? Exactly like Malka said, that if you have something that you want to accomplish, if you want to save somebody from some harm, somebody's doing something wrong, and therefore you want to take a stand, so then you got to say it in public. If you're just going to whisper it in private to one person, two people at a time, so then that goes back to being gossip. It may be something that is important for protection, but then say it in a forum where it's going to make a difference. Say it somewhere where you're going to have an impact. Don't just whisper it anonymously on some blog, but say it out loud so that it's going to actually have an impact that it's supposed to have. But there's a fourth position. And the fourth position, I think, is particularly relevant for us understanding what exactly is the difference between the post-internet era and the pre-internet era. The fourth opinion connects this statement in the Talmud to another equally baffling statement in the Talmud. So we said before, we're all in agreement, that saying Yehoshaphat is a jerk, that's problematic. That's Lashon Hara. What if Yehoshaphat, I checked first to see if he was here before. Let's say Yehoshaphat actually was here. Let's say Yehoshaphat is sitting in this front seat. Does that make it better or make it worse? What do you think? Anyone think it makes it better? Okay, it's one opinion for better. Anyone agree? Okay, so almost everyone else, no offense, Peter, but everyone else thinks it makes it worse, and they're in good company. Because the Chafetz Chaim says that too. The Chafetz Chaim says if you say something behind someone's back, that's Lashon Hara. But if you say in front of them, it's worse. Why is it worse? Because you're embarrassing them, right? That's a Torah prohibition too. But the Talmud agrees with Peter, right?
Yeah. I was just going to say, the Gemara that says, what's Dibara, and it's one of the conditions for it not to be Dibara is that you would say to the person directly.
So that's connected to this statement. The Talmud has a statement similar to the statement about public, that says if you say something in someone's presence, or even if you would say it in their presence, so then that's also not considered to be Lashon Hara, which, again, seems to go against what almost everyone in the room thought and what the Chafetz Chaim thought. So what's going on? Why should it be better if you're saying it in public? Why should it be better if you're saying it in front of the person who you're talking about, who would probably be embarrassed to have you say bad things about them in front of them? So here's where the fourth view comes in. Alana, you want to try the fourth view? That is how some understand it. Some understand it that... You have two suggestions. You have two suggestions, is that what you said?
No, I was saying, like, if you're listening to Lashon Hara and your friend saying it, so then the group of three go. The girl who's saying it, the girl who's listening, and the girl that she's saying it to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And maybe, like, because she doesn't offend, that's just bad. So that's the opinion that if somebody listens to them saying he doesn't offend, then they're also, like, potentially not offending it, so therefore they're making it a different, like,
speaker or that. So it's all about defense. So there are some who understand that way. There are some who say that giving the person an opportunity to defend themselves makes it a lot better. Although that's a little bit difficult, because at the end of the day, they may not feel that they can really defend themselves in these circumstances. They may be too embarrassed to respond. It's hard to see how that really saves us from a Lashon Hara problem, so much so the Talmud would say that, now it's not Lashon Hara anymore. So say that the authors of the Tosfos, on the side of the page of the Talmud, Tosfos says that these two statements are connected. That the idea that you can say something in public, and you can say something in front of the person you're talking about, Those are connected ideas, and they're based on the following premise. They're based on the assumption that we're talking about a very narrow area. We're not talking about normal Lashon Hara. We're actually not talking about Yehoshaphat is a jerk type of Lashon Hara. What are we talking about? We're talking about statements which you actually mean positively, but they're a little bit ambiguous, and the listener may interpret them negatively. You may understand you as saying something bad. So then you might say that you shouldn't say it. Why should you say something? The listeners may come away with a negative impression, even if you mean it positively. So to that, say Tosus, the Talmud is telling us there are certain things that make it okay. There are certain contextual aspects that if this is there, we know your listeners will get the right idea. So let's say, for example, I were to say to you, Yehoshaphat, you can always count on him. Right? So you might think you can always rely on him, you can always count on him to do a good job. Or you might think it means you can always count on him to mess up. Right? It could be taken positively, it could be taken negatively. So if I talk to you privately and I say, Yehoshaphat, you can always count on him, you might not know which of the two I mean. And you'll walk away thinking maybe he's not so reliable. But if I get up at the shul in front of hundreds of people, including Yehoshaphat, and he's sitting right there, and I say, Yehoshaphat, you can always count on him. So then hopefully people will understand why I must mean it in the positive way. Here I just said it in front of a whole room of people, and I said it in front of him. So the positive meaning must be the real meaning. And that's why it's okay. Now think about that for a minute. Right? The understanding of Tosfos writing, let's say about 800 years ago, is that if somebody gets up and says something, maybe they'll say something negative once in a while. Maybe they'll speak Lashon Hara once in a while, we all do. But if you're going to say something in front of a lot of people, or you're going to say something in front of the person you're talking about, then you wouldn't be nasty. Then you would mean only positive things. 2015. Is that still true? Nowadays, you say something on the internet is not in front of three, what we call Ape Tlasa. The internet is Ape 7 billion, right? The World Wide Web. Everything that's said in front of the internet is in front of the entire world, generally including the person that you're speaking about. Is it still true that you wouldn't say something that might be taken negatively? It seems to be the world has changed in that way. And that the way we relate to each other from behind a computer screen is very significantly different than the way we do face to face and the way we used to as a matter of course. And that's before you even come on to the issue of anonymity. That when somebody is writing without a name and no one's going to know who it is, so then that's a whole different world. But even if you're actually using your name, so modern psychologists have identified something called the online disinhibition effect. That somebody who's sitting behind the computer screen in their pajamas tend to say things that they would never say face to face, even when they're not anonymous. And imagine when you are anonymous. Imagine how that has changed the nature of our interaction and how much more careful we have to be nowadays. And together with that, a whole host of other issues come up. And it's not just about Lashon Hara. It's also about other Torah prohibitions like Onas Devarim. There is a prohibition in the Torah not to say something that is unnecessarily hurtful to somebody else. Not just about someone, but to cause somebody pain through what you say. So if you look at the comments that are written on blogs today, you see things that people say that they would never say to someone's face. Even people who are otherwise nice, innocent people, all of a sudden this context has the same hurtful effect, but the one doing it is disconnected from that. You don't feel anymore how you're actually hurting someone, how you're talking badly about someone, how you're causing pain to another individual. All of that gets lost on us in this new social environment. And there are all kinds of other responsibilities that come along with that, and we're just about out of time, so I won't be able to go into specifics, but it affects what we say, it affects what we make possible. So, for example, even if you, let's say you have a blog, you have a web page, so other people can comment on it, so even if everything that you say is nice and innocent, but there is a prohibition in the Torah, there's a prohibition in the Talmud, reading the Torah, called Avak Lashon Hara. You know what Avak Lashon Hara is? What's an example of Avak Lashon Hara? The second degree, the dust of Lashon Hara. If you say something positive about someone, says the Talmud, that's a problem. What's wrong with saying something positive about someone? I thought Lashon Hara means bad. Isn't that part of the name? Hara is bad, right? So what's wrong with saying something good? Why should that be a problem? So many understand that if you say something good, you say that Josephine's a nice person, so the person you're talking to says, oh really, you think she's so nice, I can tell you a few stories. And then they feel like they have to respond and rebut everything you're saying. So that tells us that not only are you responsible for what you say, you're also responsible for what you provoke and for what you facilitate. So here the internet gives us a whole new forum in which you're not only talking yourself to the whole world, but you're allowing others to respond in front of the whole world. It puts a different degree of responsibility on us. And particularly in terms of that area, it used to be that if you're worried that you might provoke someone to say something nasty by saying something good, somebody else is going to respond and say something nasty. So that's a problem. But you have your friends, you have a circle of friends. You sometimes can feel you're pretty safe. I could say something nice about my friend in front of five of my other friends, and none of them are going to feel like they have to argue. Nobody's going to feel like you have to respond negatively. But in the whole wide world of the internet, there's nobody out there who is so beloved that there isn't one crazy person on the other side of the world who's going to say, oh, you think that person's good? Let me tell you how terrible they are. So we have a whole different reality even in terms of that, even in terms of the positive things that we're saying, even in terms of what we facilitate others saying, and that requires a whole different attitude. So what does that mean for us? And there's so much more we could say about this, but there's always more Lashon Hara to say, and there's not enough time, so we're almost out of time. But what does that leave us with? So again, the point is not to say the internet is bad, but that if we're going to use the internet for all the wonderful positive things, so then we have to be aware of where these pitfalls are. And we have to be aware of how we can lose sight of who we want to be and try to connect a little bit more to the positives, because that is about connectedness and that's about empathy. And the point of being connected is so that you can feel more what it's like to be the other person. And to focus more on that aspect of what the internet is there for, the more you can truly feel like you identify with the feelings and the issues of someone else, the less likely are you to stumble into this pit, the less likely are you to trip over the stumbling block that was mentioned before, and hopefully we can be a little bit safer, we can be a little bit more assured that we're using this wonderful tool in a productive way. And we'll just close on one other note, that the issue of having a broader population when you say something positive and how it's more likely someone's going to say something negative if you're speaking to a larger crowd. So Rabbeinu Yonah wrote about that 800 years ago before the internet. He didn't talk about the World Wide Web, but he did say that when you're speaking in front of a large crowd, you do take a bigger risk and you have to worry about it a little bit more. So he says there is a way to counteract that. That if you create an environment where everybody is respectful to everyone else, and the one person is going to get up and say, oh, you think that person's good, let me tell you some stories, that person is going to feel uncomfortable because they're going to know that that kind of talk is not welcome. That's a corrective. And again, we can work to try to create a space within our internet world where, even though it's open to the whole world, but we set out how we want to be and how we want to interact, and we can hope that that will allow us to have, again, a much more positive experience that is in much greater harmony with who we want to be. So I think we are just about out of time. I don't know if there were any questions, if there are any issues. Okay, well then I'll wish you a wonderful shopping at this farm sale. There are some wonderful refreshments over here. I thank you all for coming and for braving the weather. And it should be a safe and wonderful evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rabbi. Thank you. Appreciate it. I wanted to thank